You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. The Great Migration is considered one of the greatest movements of people in United States history. Millions of African Americans leaving the oppressive and violent Jim Crow South with the hope of finding more tolerance, equity, and opportunity. According to the National Archives, this period spans from roughly 1910 to 1970, with migratory routes from the Midwest or to the Midwest, the North, and the West, and that, of course, includes California. This time period really isn't that long ago, and the people who went on this uncertain and trying journey are still alive today to tell their story or pass down the stories of their elders. A professor is understanding how the Great Migration shaped the Sacramento Valley and the Bay Area by interviewing African Americans who planted roots in the Bay Area or Sacramento, and either they or their parents were born in the South. And the goal is to learn their firsthand experiences. I sat down with Mariama Gray, an associate professor of educational leadership at CSU East Bay, with more about her Great Migration study. So you yourself are a fourth generation Californian. When did you start learning about the Great Migration?
I actually didn't learn about the Great Migration for a very long time. I'm ashamed to say that I learned about it when reading Isabel Wilkerson's book, The Warmth of Other Suns. But I had been surrounded by stories of the Great Migration throughout my entire life. I just didn't have a name for it. Right. So listening to my grandmother's stories and my mother's stories, I was listening to stories of the Great Migration then.
When did you start thinking about doing research and a study on this?
You know, it really came from conversations with my grandmother. She grew up in Northern California. She went to schools in Grass Valley and Vallejo. And during that time, she really experienced a lot of anti-Blackness. So she experienced racial violence from her classmates. She experienced racism in the classroom from her peers and her teachers and her school leaders. And as I listened to her story, I thought that this was a story that I wondered if other African Americans had encountered. I was curious about their educational experiences. And really what we know about the Great Migration is that there are lessons that the elders of this generation who are still alive and with us can teach us about the problems that we're facing in education today.
For those who may be learning of the Great Migration for the first time, actually putting a name to this, as you just touched upon, how do you explain it to people?
Well, it's the mass migration, really the fleeing of 6 million African Americans from the South to the North, to the West, to the East, for really three reasons. So economic exploitation, racial violence, and political disenfranchisement. African Americans in the South were hearing from some of their colleagues and also recruiters and newspapers in the North that there was improved opportunity for them, economic opportunity, for sure, and that racial relations were improved to some extent. And they were being treated brutally in the South. They were subject to lynching. They were experiencing debt peonage. And they were not able to vote and change the racial spatial order of the day. And so they voted with their feet and they moved out to places where maybe they could live a little bit better.
Yeah, and this spans across a variety of states from the North to the Midwest to the West. When did African Americans begin arriving and planting roots in Northern California, which is the subject of your study?
Well, about 4,000 African Americans have lived in California since before the Great Migration started. So we've been here for a really long time. We've been here since the 1860s. So African Americans started to move, though. There are many waves, but when we talk about the Great Migration between 1910 and 1940, that's our first wave. And then about that time, you see maybe roughly about 30,000 or so moving during that period. But between 1950 and 1970, you have 300,000 African Americans moving, and mostly for jobs in the defense industry and manufacturing.
Yeah, so that's a significant increase.
Right.
Do you know what states from the South they were mostly coming from?
Right. Yeah. African Americans follow this migratory pattern of the trains because, you know, in this time, automobiles were expensive. So not everyone could afford to own one. So some people did travel by car, but mostly people followed the railway lines. So when you were escaping the South, you followed whatever train could get you out to the North. And so African Americans from California traveled mostly from three states because that's the rail line. Louisiana, Arkansas, and Texas.
Oh. You know, when I think of historically Black communities just in Sacramento, I think of Oak Park and Del Paso Heights. I mean, were these directly shaped by the Great Migration?
Yes. Although I want to tell you a little quick story about Del Paso Heights. Del Paso Heights comes to be because of eminent domain. There were earlier African-American communities before that. So one of the communities was around the WX Freeway. And due to eminent domain, the state took that land and built a freeway and destroyed the African-American community. And they had to find another place to live. And one of those places where they were allowed to live was Del Paso Heights. So that community is directly shaped by the Great Migration and by also just disruption, which is pretty common with African-American communities. Oak Park was not a community that initially was open to African-American people, if you can believe it. Land Park was a neighborhood where there were barracks and what we would call, or what folks called then, projects. So that was a neighborhood where African-Americans lived before it was called Land Park. I was rather surprised to learn that when talking to my participants. They have quite a grasp of local history. And so, and just general Rosemont and that, you know, Sacramento proper, those were places where African-Americans lived.
Right. I mean, I can just imagine how much you learn just from listening to people and their lived experience and what they went through and their families went through. You know, you tweeted that, you know, the experience of the children of the Great Migration in Northern California and their stories, they weren't really what you expected. And when I was looking at your thread on Twitter, you shared, you know, really the dangerous journey to travel from the South to the West. What safety measures did African Americans take to get to Northern California safely?
Right. So, you know, it was dangerous to leave the South because, you know, the South lost about half of its workforce during that time. And so there were white men stationed at the railway stations, agents who were trying to make sure that African-Americans didn't leave. And so African-Americans, when they did leave, they wouldn't tell their families or friends that they were leaving. They escaped in the dead of night. There are stories of African-Americans shipping themselves out of state and shipping containers. And those who took the train, you know, there are folks who did take the train, and then there are folks who drove. And the stories I captured of those who drove, who had the economic means to purchase a car, are pretty heartbreaking. So remember that this is a time period where hotels and rest stops and restaurants and gas stations and restrooms are not open to African Americans. And so they have to really prepare when they're going to leave, especially if they've got their children and families with them. Children need food breaks, restroom breaks. And so they would bring food with them. They would, you know, cook for days, enough food that would last them in case they couldn't get any food on the journey. They would gas up their cars. They would travel to as far as they could go, try not to travel at night. And one of the most interesting things I learned from some of the migrants is when they would stop in front of the homes of other African-Americans in African-American communities. One participant shared that when her family stopped in front of one of those homes in an African-American community, they knocked on the door, asked if they could stay for the night. The family said yes. And then they brought them food and they brought them drinks. And then they said, "Where are you from, dear? Let me have your people's name and their address." And then they wrote to their people and told them, "Hey, your person has made it. They are safe." And while we were in that interview, we were both reduced to puddles of tears because what a powerful, loving thing for that person to do for their community.
Absolutely. I mean, you're talking about strangers, but also a solidarity of caring for one another, because even though they are strangers, they understand the risks and the struggles as Black Americans, which is just incredibly powerful, and the amount of compassion that was shown during that time. Another wonderful part that you share is that, you know, some of the men that you interviewed have friendships or lived in the cities that they, or they've kept up with their childhood friends basically for over 50 years, which is just wonderful. And those are, that's really like the ingredients of a tight fabric of community and relationships. That must feel so special.
It does. And in fact, that's how I get quite a large number of my participants. You know, it's always a challenge to find an aging population who doesn't really access the internet in the ways that you would expect with social media and during COVID. And so there's something called snowball, purposeful sampling, where you ask a person, you interview a person, and then you ask them, do you know anybody else who might participate in the study? And many people were able to offer their friends as folks who would participate in the study. But also in listening to these conversations, you begin to get a sense of what it was like for their community when you talk to multiple people, what it was like to be African-American in, say, cities like Vallejo or Del Paso Heights or in Oakland. And I say those cities in particular because those are the places where the African-American men and women had these enduring relationships, 50, 60, 70 years in some cases.
You know, given that these Californians that you're interviewing were children during the Great Migration, they were born in the 1920s, what have these conversations meant to you? I mean, as a professor and a researcher, but also as a fourth generation Californian?
Everything. I have very much enjoyed talking with African-American elders. I'm a hobbyist in genealogy myself. I love history. But it's very special when someone invites you into their home and shares intimate details that are often painful about their lives. Many told me that this was the first time that they had shared these stories with their about their lives. And so I have this archive for each family member. Each time I interview someone, I create a folder with the interview, with a transcript, with all of the artifacts, so that they can then share it with their family. I know the importance of African-American history having started with my own family, and I know how very little African-Americans know about their family's migration journeys. And then I also really think it's important for us as a community to understand these stories, these histories, to share them, pass them down through the generations, and for the greater state and educators to know these stories as well.
You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio, and if you're just joining us, we're talking with Professor Mariama Gray and her study about the Great Migration of African Americans from the South and how it really shaped Northern California. So although the intention, the goal of the Great Migration was motivated to leave racism, violence, and discrimination, that wasn't necessarily the case when African Americans arrived in Northern California. What was early life like for African Americans?
Right. Yeah, it was pretty difficult. African Americans, as I shared earlier, were really leaving for three reasons: economic precarity, racial violence, political disenfranchisement. And they found those same things here. California, well, let's talk about the North, first of all. The North was not a place that was immune to lynchings of African Americans. African Americans were lynched in Oregon and in California, surprisingly. And California had an active Klan. California is a state that was founded as a segregationist state. It was founded during a time when they were able to escape the issues going on with the Civil War, but yet there were sympathizers with the Southern predicament. And the Democrats were quite strong here in this state. And the Democrats were the party that, at the time, wanted segregation and wanted slavery.
Yeah, that's an important clarification.
Yeah. So African-Americans who come here, in terms of economic precarity, you know, in the South, they were experienced debt peonage, right? They were sharecroppers, not farmers, sharecroppers. And in California, they came to work. And what they found was they were not able to work in the high status jobs that their white peers were able to work in. And then when they wanted to move up in terms of employment, they were not able to move up. They were not given supervisory roles. And in the rare case that they were, one of the participants shared that he was given a supervisory role and he was told by his white employees that they would not take orders from an N-word. So, that was pretty difficult. So there was a lot of employment discrimination. And then in terms of racial violence, again, there were places where African-Americans knew that they could not live. They were African-American young men in my study share story after story of their encounters with the police. And you know that now the state, like the nation, has a large African-American incarcerated population. And so that's another form of political disenfranchisement, because when they come out, they're unable to vote. So there's the political disenfranchisement there. A piece of the story, though, that I want to tell that really comes out in the the interviews is around the where African Americans live or how they live when they first arrive. So you can imagine folks coming to the state with very little. I talked to you a little bit about debt peonage and about the poverty that they lived in before coming to California. So when they arrive, they don't have very much. And there's also, especially folks who are arriving in the 30s and 40s, there's this unexpected boom of folks. There's insufficient housing discrimination. And so African Americans have to figure out where to live. And so they get creative. They are allowed to live in particular areas of the city.
Because of redlining and basically covenants banning minorities from living in certain neighborhoods.
Well, not only that, just outright discrimination from folks who would rent to them. So they weren't even purchasing yet. They wouldn't rent to them. And they live in, for example, multiple families live in one house. One of my participants shared the story of living in the garage of a house. There were 9 people living in one garage. So multiple families, there was Richard and his cousin Bernice and all of their uncles, all living in a garage. And at the time, they were not 2-car garages. They were 1-car garages. They had a rope that they would string between lengthwise in the garage, and they would hang a sheet over it. And that was how they were able to create some kind of privacy. So multiple families living in a house. And when new families moved, they would often ask one another where to live. They would share their housing. They would share information about jobs. And so that's how early African Americans lived.
What surprised you most about everything that you've discovered from talking to people who are a direct lineage of the Great Migration?
A lot of things were interesting and surprising to me. I think this idea that when I listen to folks, it really disabused me of a lot of the myths about the African American community. I was struck by how hardworking, how resourceful, and how brilliant African American great migrants are and have been. When you come to a state with so little and you are able to construct communities out of nothing. So in Del Paso Heights, they are moved, displaced, and they have to build a home. And one of my participants shared, she's an early migrant, one of the first families to move into Del Paso Heights. And she says her father built her home, but he didn't do it alone. Other African Americans who were moving to the community had other skills. So these are very skilled Black men who barter and share and build one another's houses and end up building this still standing community of Del Paso Heights. That is amazing, the sense of community and care. And that was communicated repeatedly in the stories that I heard during this study.
Yeah. And now you're documenting it too, to share with others as well. And you're still looking for more participants, right?
Yes. Yes. Folks are welcome to email me at greatmigrationstudy@gmail.com.
Professor Gray, thank you so much for taking the time and sharing all the important work that you're doing.
Thank you for having me.
That is Cal State East Bay Professor Mariama Gray discussing her study about the Great Migration of African Americans from the South and how it shaped Northern California. Still ahead, the Sacramento Kings leading the playoffs is bigger than basketball. It is igniting downtown businesses. We'll discuss the economic shot in the arm Sacramento has seen with the Kings' success. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.